Welcome to A Path Home. This is the podcast where we're going to demystify the tasks related to after-death care through hearing stories from people who have cared for their own deceased loved ones at home. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. I'm a home funeral guide, death educator, and a member of the National Home Funeral Alliance. On this episode, Louise Comfort shares with us the home funeral that she held for her beloved husband, Doug. The Comfort family, Louise, Doug, and their teenage sons, Kane and Lucas, were deeply engaged in approaching life in natural and holistic ways. And when the time came to make his funeral arrangements, they embraced the notion of caring for his body in their home. What unfolded was an incredible experience for their extended family and large circle of friends. I had recently moved to Kansas and was introduced to the family through a mutual friend who let Louise know that taking an unconventional path in funeral planning was possible. The notion resonated with the couple and reflected a continuation of the way they lived their lives. Hi, Louise. Good to see you.
It's great to see you as well.
I'd like to start by asking you to tell me a little bit about Doug.
Well, my husband Doug and I met in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it was pretty much love at first sight. And I went home and told my mom, I said, I think I met my husband. He's just a wonderful soul. And we went on to do a lot of great things and have two beautiful boys, and we built a beautiful life together. Mm-hmm. And we were married for 18 years.
18 years. Wow. And then Doug was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, Doug was diagnosed with cancer in December of 2001. He was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. It was in his lymph nodes. And at that point, he went through a very, very heavy duty cancer treatment. He was young and vibrant. He was 40 years old. And so we ended up heading down that path.
Mm-hmm. So after that initial round of treatment, did he go into remission for a while? And then,
you know, we went through the treatment and they call it remission, but, you know, there were no signs of the cancer. So, we did have enjoy a long period of time where he wasn't getting medical treatment. And then 10 years later, he was re-diagnosed. And when he went to the doctor for a scan because he had a headache and had some vision issues, they had found that the cancer had spread throughout really his entire body, and he had brain lesions and things of that nature. And at that point, he went into more treatment.
I see. So he was 53 years old when he died?
He was 52 when he passed away, and he originally was diagnosed when he was 40, and then we realized that the cancer returned at 50, and then he passed away at 52. So we really had a really difficult couple of years there in the end.
Mm-hmm. As partners in this journey, he was involved in the discussion around what would happen with his body after death. And you met with a funeral director?
After he was diagnosed, we did realize that he would not be able to survive this. He would eventually succumb to this breast cancer. And so obviously you start making arrangements and thinking about how the end of your life is going to play out. And we had a lot of discussion, and he did not want to be in a hospital. He wanted to be at home. He wanted to be surrounded by the children and loved ones. And as it got closer and closer to the end, then we did start to discuss funeral arrangements and things of that nature. And he was definitely a partner in that. You know, it was quite interesting how that entire situation unfolded. I was handling everything, you know, very, very well and holding it together, keeping the household going, keeping the kids active and moving and, you know, just keeping our lives together. And then it came to the funeral arrangements, because Doug was getting more and more weak, and we knew that the end was approaching. And I just had an absolute meltdown, because I was like, how are we going to handle this? I called the funeral home and had somebody come over to talk to Doug and I about it, because naturally that's where your mind goes. These arrangements need to be made. And Doug and I were both very open and honest about that. And the person came to the house. She was lovely. And she brought a 3-ring binder that with plastic page protectors on it. And she was going through the funeral packages. You know, it's like, this package is $8,000 and here are all the things you get with it. This package is $15,000 and you get this level of casket with it. And I just absolutely had a meltdown. During that process, because I'm thinking, this is so impersonal and I don't know this person and this doesn't seem like the process that feels good in my heart. It didn't feel like there was any type of spirituality to it. It didn't feel thoughtful. It didn't feel respectful to me. It was looking through a catalog, and so she wasn't there for more than 15 or 20 minutes. And I just asked her if, you know, she could leave. And I just needed a moment to digest the little bit of information that I had collected from her at that point. Later that day, I was just running some errands and I was literally having a meltdown and crying. And I was just thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I've handled everything, you know, all the doctor's appointments, all the medications, financial arrangements, and it's going to be the funeral details that push me over the edge, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, my cousin called me and I described this to her. I said, I'm having a meltdown. I don't even know how to, you know, deal with this. And she said, well, Louise, you don't have to do any of that. And she said, you need to call Sarah. Remember, that's what she does. You don't have to have the funeral home involved, and you don't have to turn Doug's body over to strangers. And I just immediately, I think in the next 5 minutes, I gave you a call and your voice was just so calming and comforting. And it was in complete contrast to, like, what you were telling me was just in complete contrast. It was the exact opposite of what I had just heard from the representative from the funeral home. And I just immediately felt comfortable talking to you. I think you came over to the house maybe that evening or the next day.
Yeah, I came over and I remember being so impressed with how thoroughly you understood the concept of home funerals. Like, it seemed to me that it resonated with you right away. Like, you got it and you responded in a way that was so thorough and, you know, what do I need to do next? And I think I told you, you need to gather your tribe.
Yeah, two things. Yes, everything that you were telling me just seemed so intuitively right, that it would be so personal and it would be what we want and what Doug wants. And I called all my girlfriends. Now, I just want to say that I was very, you know, nervous about this and about calling my beautiful family and friends and saying, okay, troops, this is what we're going to do. Because it did seem very, you know, out of the ordinary, and I didn't know how people were going to react. But what was more scary to me was to end Doug's life in a way that didn't feel right to me. So,
definitely. Yeah.
I can't describe to you how strongly my heart and my gut reacted negatively to the sales call from the funeral home. It just, everything in my whole body just, it just felt wrong to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just because I was going through so much spiritually. I've been a yoga instructor. I've, you know, done lots of meditation. I, you know, just eating plants and just connecting with nature as much as possible. I really feel like this whole process is very natural. And that's what, where my life has been heading, is to make everything in my life more natural and more intuitive, and have less intervention.
Sure. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I remember when we first spoke with Doug about this too, that he was wanting to be sure that it was going to be okay with his faith tradition.
Right. Doug was very respectful of all religions, but he was definitely culturally Catholic. He absolutely wanted to make sure. So we called Father Keith, and Father Keith said, oh, well, absolutely. This is how we used to do it. This is exactly what we used to do until we forgot. And so Father Keith was rather excited about it. So yeah, no problems there.
Mm-hmm. And he came to the house. It was the next morning that we had a meeting with all of your women friends, and Father Keith was there. And I remember we all gathered around Doug's bed at that point. He was in the living room.
Mm-hmm. And there were probably about 8 of us there,
mm-hmm.
Including Father Keith. And we just all sat down and talked about how this was going to go and exactly what needed to be done. And I think everybody just took different responsibilities. And, but at first, everybody was pretty shocked, you mm-hmm. know. I think I called them all there, and, you know, because people are constantly saying, well, what can we do? What can we do? And a lot of times people don't take anybody up on the offer, you know, but.
Sure. This is very specific though.
Yeah, this was very specific. Come over. I'm definitely going to need some help. And this is what we're going to do. And of course, they're all my dear friends, and they would just do anything for me. And nobody really said anything. But it was very funny after this was all said and done, and a month or two goes by, and, you know, some of my friends are like, okay, I really thought you were crazy. Like, I really thought you were nuts, but I love you so much that I just was going to do whatever you asked me to do in this time and situation. So,
yeah. I also remember that Doug's dad was part of that circle, and he was having a hard time with the conversation. And I know this only from observing him, and he stood up at the end and just walked out the front door, I think, to have a cigarette. And in my mind, and we'll get back to this later, but that was, he went through such a transformation over the course of the 3 days.
Yes, he did. He did not know how to react to the plans to, you know, keep Doug's body mm-hmm. at home, and for all the plans that we were making. And I do think it very much stressed him out. And that's why mm-hmm. he had to go out and have a cigarette.
Exactly. So it all happened pretty quickly. Once we had this plan in place, it was almost as if Doug was like, all right, everything's set to go. I remember him also saying that one of the things that he liked about it was that you guys love to entertain and have people at the house, and it just seemed like a place that made sense to him.
Right. We constantly had people over to the house. We had a large house that was great for entertaining, and we liked to fill it up and to use it. And so when we talked about this, we said it would absolutely be a celebration of life, a celebration of Doug's life. We would eat and drink and be merry and share stories. And that's the way he wanted it. And that's exactly what we did. And one of the things that I remember saying to Doug is, you know, we are going to make sure that we just continue to care for you during that time. And, you know, before, because his wishes were to be cremated. And so I, you know, assured him that, and assured myself that, you know, there wouldn't be any body bags or strangers coming and taking his body away or any cold drawers or anything for his body. Just the thought of that was just so, I don't know why, it was so scary to me and just seemed so much less respectful. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to continue to honor Doug through the end.
Doug was a musician.
And yes.
His friend that he played music with was came to the house and brought his guitar and provided some live music during the event.
Right. We had live music, food and drink. And as the guest, I think we had about 80 people to the house. And as the guests were arriving, I think people just did not know what to expect. As they came in, I think that there was definitely some nervousness and hesitation. And later, again, after the experience, people told me they just thought, oh my gosh, what is going on? Louise has kept Doug's body at the house and we're going to the house for, you know, the wake. And they did not know what to expect. But once everybody arrived, everybody just had an amazing, deep, deep experience. We had the music provided an amazing backdrop, and then we all gathered.
Can you first describe the room where Doug was laid out?
Yes, the room where Doug was laid out was Doug's library, a place where he read constantly, and he would sit by the fire and read. And we had Doug laid out on a bed that was draped in white fabric, and he was wrapped in a shroud, and he just looked extremely peaceful, and it just seemed so natural for him to be there in that room. And we had candles lit continually from the time that he passed until his body was taken for cremation. And it was, that library just became a sanctuary, and he was there for a couple of days, and it just, you know, allowed for all of us to sit and be with him. And I would catch the boys at different times during those days, just sitting quietly with Doug. Doug's dad sat and spent hours just sitting there. None of that would have been possible had it not been in the home. And it just gave us so much time to digest also what had happened. Mm-hmm. And to process. And we just would not have been able to have that time.
Doug's dad said to me on the afternoon of the home funeral, when everybody was coming over, he was sitting in the chair next to Doug. And I just peeked in to see how he was doing. And he said, you know, when you first came over here and talked about this with us, he goes, I thought it was wrong. But now that I've had all this time to sit and meditate with my son, I couldn't imagine doing this any other way. And I was so struck by that. I was so struck that he even used the word meditate, because it didn't seem like that was part of his lexicon or practice.
Right.
But it was so moving, so moving.
Yeah, I really think that I just keep using the word spiritual, but that's what everybody said to me. That was absolutely the follow-up conversation. And there were so many people afterwards that said, this is exactly what I want for myself. I'm putting this down in my notes right now.
Having never known before that it was even possible.
Right. And I had multiple people also tell me that it was the most spiritual experience that they had ever had. So we all gathered around in the living room, and everybody had a chance to say a few words about Doug, and we were all holding hands, and that was extremely special. And we also prayed right over Doug. So the library's pretty small, and we all just came together, and I asked people to move very, very close to each other so that we could feel each other's energy. And so we were right there surrounding Doug's body. And that's when Father Keith did, you know, he said the prayers and did the service. And it was just so special. Often in the funeral homes, you know, you've got the casket and it's in this area, and then there are seats, but we were just all standing and gathering and holding one another and holding space for Doug and for Doug's spirit.
Mm. Yeah, it was so beautiful. And shortly after that, he was transferred from the bed into this cardboard container that was going to be used for the cremation. In the meantime, over the course of the couple of days, a friend of yours who's an artist helped to organize your sons and some of their friends to decorate the top of the cremation container.
Yes, and that's something that we hadn't really planned in advance. That just spontaneously happened because, you know, I'm staring at this, you know, cardboard container, which we had just ordered. I felt it unnecessary to purchase some sort of a casket or something if it was just going to get incinerated. So Carolyn came, and they took all of, because Doug had gotten so much correspondence, like every single day he would get cards and notes from people. And so Carolyn and the boys took all of those items and cut them up and created this decoupage on the top of the cremation container. So it was absolutely beautiful.
It was a landscape, kind of like mm-hmm. a Kansas landscape with some water and the fields and the sun. And another thing that was so beautiful about it is they preserved phrases and beautiful messages of love and healing that they had expressed to Doug, and some of those were visible as well.
Yeah, it was incredible. And the funny thing about that is at the last minute, you know, we told the crematory, oh my gosh, save the top, don't burn that up. And so now I have it framed and it's in my home.
Nice. Yeah, that was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. He was transferred into the cremation container. The lid was put on, and then his brothers and your two sons carried him out to the waiting vehicle to take him to be cremated.
Right. And, you know, it was interesting because we did have the funeral home come with the hearse, and so we had him taken in the hearse to be immediately cremated.
That's right. They promised that you had asked them to not put him in, like you said earlier,
any kind of refrigeration or anything like that. Yeah, definitely yeah. Did not want that.
And they agreed to cremate him that night on the schedule that you asked them to, which was around 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night.
Right, right. But the thing that they kept pushing for was, oh, well, you know, you don't want anybody to carry Doug's body because, you know, we've had things happen and you just don't want that to happen, especially in your house. And I said, no, we want to bear the weight. We want to do this for Doug. I don't want him on wheels and just being wheeled around. And so that was also very important. If there's something symbolic, you know, you and I talked about this, there's something very symbolic about bearing the weight of your loved one and carrying somebody. So Doug's brothers and Kane and Lucas transferred Doug into the cremation container and then brought him out to the hearse.
And while that was happening, as I recall, everyone was gathered on both sides of the staircase in front of the house going down, and Hud and his wife were singing Amazing Grace, and everybody took up the song. And
yeah, it was just absolutely, it was beautiful. It was a very spiritual experience.
Is there anything that you would share with others who are thinking about having a home funeral?
Well, I definitely, for me, it was just an absolutely incredible capstone to Doug's life. And I just felt as if we were able to honor him in a way that was magical. And I would highly recommend it. I think it is handling these arrangements yourself. I think it's very therapeutic. I think that it's really just a natural extension of life. I mean, you would care for somebody while they're alive. Why wouldn't you just continue that care right until the end? So
yeah, exactly. Is there anything that you would want to share about your boys' experience with it?
Well, I definitely feel that it allowed the boys to process. It allowed the boys to participate. It allowed the boys to care for their father. And I think sometimes death doesn't even seem real when you just whisk the body away. And I mean, sometimes now I'm still in shock, you know, and I got to spend all that time with Doug after death. I got to spend time, you know, with his body and spirit there. And I'm still in shock. So I can't imagine, you know, just from a psychological standpoint, I think it's very important to have that time. And again, I just think it's a very natural experience. And then all of a sudden, when you abruptly have strangers coming and you have body bags and you handle it in that method, it's like an interruption of the grieving process. From a psychological standpoint, I think that ceremony is important.
Well said. We touched on the point that you had made before about, you know, wanting to do things in a natural way in so many areas of your life. And this is another one, you know, a pretty profound one, because it has to do with the end of the life of someone you loved. Do you want to expand on that whole concept?
I think that we are living, and you and I were talking about this before, that we are living in this age of technology and of progress and of doing things more quickly and more efficiently. And, you know, there's some things that you just don't want to do more quickly or more efficiently. And I think birth and death are two of those things that we really don't want to interrupt. You know, you talk about childbirth, and when people are having babies, you know, there are a lot of studies. When you start interfering with that natural process, things happen. But this, it's the same thing with death. It's like, oh, well, it'll be, you know, more efficient if somebody just comes and takes this body away, and then I'll just, you know, pick out this package. And but I just, for our psyches, I don't think that that's the best way to go. And I do think that it's very, very personal. Some people don't have the resources that I had or the community around them. And I don't think anybody should feel bad about how they handle it. But I'm just saying, for me, this was a much better process. And I think that people should be able to choose. I mean, it's our body. It's our loved ones' bodies. And I feel that we should have choices as to how this is handled. And, you know, from a cost standpoint, I mean, I just think it would be very, very difficult for a lot of people to spend $10,000 or $15,000 on a funeral. That is definitely a factor. The cost is definitely a factor. And Doug and I had enough money, we could have spent money on that, but that was not our priority. That's definitely something we talked about. You know, we're very frugal people, and that wasn't something that we wanted to spend our money on.
Sure. As a culture, we have this idea that we can pretty much fix everything through buying something. And, you know, I think that is a little bit at the heart of your message.
Right. And also, that's one of the things that, I mean, it leads to loneliness and isolation. I mean, I would not have had near the contact with friends and family had I just signed up for the package. This allowed people to come in and out of the house and to have collaboration, and that in and of itself, to have that feeling that you're not alone, that people are with you and they're supporting you. That is so much a part of the healing process. And when you take the community out of it and there's no, you know, reason for somebody to come over or to help with this or that, you know, and when you're going through this super traumatic time, that's when you need people to be around, you know. And I would just encourage anybody that's going through the death of a loved one, when people ask, what can I do? Give them the gift of helping you. And they're grieving too, because that person obviously was most likely very special to them as well. And they want to do something. Doing and helping is part of the recovery process and the healing process and the grieving process. I think people a lot of times just want to do things themselves, or they feel bad asking for help, but helping somebody is a gift. So allow people to help you.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Good advice. This was really nice, Louise. I'm so grateful to you for sharing the story, and also so grateful that I was able to be a part of it. A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for families who choose to care for their own loved ones after death. Visit our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, please tell a friend and be sure to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home was written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our cover art is designed by Linda Curray, production assistance by Tim Howell. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass: we are all walking each other home. I want to be there to walk you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens the other way around, I know you're gently It's breath.